I did not say that they themselves were physically in the stadiums, they only followed it with the help of television and similar devices we own. All this is unbelievable. In the meantime, several men had come to the grass field, carrying some U-shaped objects. It could have been goals, but there were five of them, and football only needs two. Two of them were the size of football goals, the other three were smaller. I thought, it cannot be at the gates if they do not score a goal. I saw where they were set up. The two larger ones were placed about 100 meters apart, the three smaller ones were in the middle of this distance. I can hardly describe what followed, but hopefully with Acock's help. The goalposts had no foundation. I was worried that they would stay firm if a goal fell. Another thing was no less astonishing. The players scattered on the field seemed to pick up part of the floor from time to time and then lay it down again. Eventually, they left again, with no line whatsoever, leaving only the gates in their place. I also did not see anybody with a bucket of paint like in the previous competition. So I asked Acock, why were not lines drawn, and how can these gates be fixed without supports? The gates have screws at the end of the goalposts that fit into the nuts in the bottom. From here you cannot see how it is done. To do this, a key is inserted into an opening in the goal bar. As for the lines, this is an artificial lawn. They simply mark a strip around the perimeter, using the reverse side of the lawn which has a contrasting color. In this way the place is staked out. But is not the grass loose where it's been turned over? No, it's a very tight strip. If you were down in the square and could see it up close, you could feel with your hands that there are solid parts at the pivot points. Why is not a color used in this game? Well, there are many kinds of sports, you cannot use the same system for all. This area is only used for the major sporting events. This game is probably one of the most popular on Acart. Yes, Wakma right. How many players are involved? 13 on each side, but there may be more or less players on each side, as you please. After this answer, Acock turned to the Son of the Sun and did not speak to me until the end of the game. It lasted about an earth hour. As the two spoke, I watched the action down there. According to Acock's explanations and what I saw, I would now like to explain how this sport is played. The size of the gates I have already explained. The middle were about 3 to 4 meters wide and 2 meters high. They were placed at a distance of 30 meters from the big gates. With each other they were about 20 meters away. The 26 players were now on the pitch, 13 in white and 13 in black. From our place you could overlook the field well, as we sat just above the middle. The lineup of the players was as follows. 5 white and 4 black stood between the big gate and the first smaller of our left, beside the in the middle little gate 2 white and 2 black on each side, and on the right between the big one and the other the little gate, 4 white and 5 black players. In addition to the 26 players, there were 4 referees. Of these, 2 each stood on each side. One of the referees had a ball in their hands that was no different from our footballs. You can see a sketch of the playing field on one of the last pages. Now I want to describe what I could see. One of the players went to the middle small goal and shot the ball on the upper edge of this gate. It was then kicked sideways to a player of his team. On the other side of the middle goal was also a player to the right and left of the center line, which went through the middle goal. Apart from the two players in the big goals, none of the players were inside the small goals. One of the referees now raised his hand, then the ball fell on the upper beam from about 3 meters high and touched I do not know whether intentionally or unintentionally when falling back the upper beam and then jumped to the right. Once it had touched the ground, there was a fierce battle of the players for possession of the ball. The battle was at its peak when the ball passed first the small and then the big goal. The whites managed to do this without the blacks touching the ball even once. The goalkeeper in the big goal remained in his goal all the time, while in the minor goals the players occasionally swapped over. Arcadian teams consist of 26 players, 13 to each side as shown in this diagram. The games were over and people were leaving. We were already up when the Son of the Sun came up again. He spoke briefly with Akok and Tuek. The three went before us to the terrace. From time to time they turned and stopped. The son of the sun came up to me, put his hands on my shoulders and said a few words that Akok translated to me. "I wish you a happy return to Earth." I was too confused to say anything. I could barely smile, thinking I had to say goodbye now. But to my surprise, Akok led me to his spaceship, and we boarded without further farewell ceremony. Soon we were high above the buildings. I leaned back in my seat and yawned so hard that Akok laughed at me. "Where are we going now?" I asked. "First to my house and then to Khon, from where we will depart. The Lord, who was with us earlier, I will probably no longer see. Yes, he will expect us there." We flew to Akok's apartment and were received by his wife and son. Akok told them I was very tired and all three retired. I thought, here too, not much seems to be going on with the farewell and the preparations for departure. But shortly thereafter, they came back into the room. Akok had a small suitcase in his hand, which certainly contained our things, and said without much ceremony, "Let's go." Very dazed by the cool farewell, I only bowed my head and followed him. I thought about this simple way of saying goodbye. After all, it was an interplanetary journey. With us on Earth, people say goodbye when traveling from one city to another. On Akkad, one seemed quite sure that they would come back again. There was no doubt about their practical ability to travel. At that thought, I leaned forward to review the city we were flying over. Akok interrupted my thoughtful reflections as he asked, "Are you satisfied?" "And certainly am that." "Will we leave right after we arrive at Khon or stay overnight?" He laughed at my question and said, "We're leaving immediately. The ship and its crew are ready. You do not have to worry. Time for sleep. AUTMLL have time enough time during the trip." "Worried?" I asked. "Will I make the return trip in unconscious state, like the trip here?" "No, this time will not be necessary." I was very relieved about this answer. And although I had seen so much at Akkad, I was very curious to see the planets in space, and indeed all space. Akok continued, "When we flew here with you, when you were unconscious, you had been subjected to various tests of your resilience. Your organism has responded well to everyone, therefore, you can make the journey with full consciousness without being harmed. Will you give me a sleeping pill so that I can sleep well?" "Yes, at certain times you will be given a sleeping pill." "Can you explain why this is necessary?" "An explanation won't attempt do you much good. You would hardly understand." "Am I going to be unconscious during certain stages?" "Yes, because they are stretches that cause great stress. And I will not feel anything of it." "No, and for two reasons. If you are unconscious, the doctors can better control your condition, because if you were awake at that time, you would certainly be in shock, and thus complicate medical control and secondly jeopardize your own condition." "Does not the crew suffer as a result?" "Of course they feels that stress as well, but they does not mind, because we all have special training for such missions."
"Does that mean that you cannot survive such a journey without such training?"
"No, that's not the case. Anyone who is healthy can survive this journey, only they would be much better off in an unconscious state." "How many of these stress stages are there, and at what point do you fly through them?"
"There are three stages. The first one starts when we leave the magnetic field of Akkad. The second one is in the middle of the journey, when you are in the so-called neutral space, and the third when you have to overcome the magnetic barriers of the Earth.
It is the same when you fly in the opposite direction, with the exception of the neutral space.
So that's why.
Look, we're flying to Khon. I wanted to rethink all my impressions, but I was not able to do that. The buildings looked the same everywhere. Akok landed the craft on a flat spot on the ground, probably at an airport. Another right turn and we were in the vicinity of various large airships.
26th, return journey.
No sooner had we got disembarked when various people came to meet us, including Tuek. While they talked, I looked around quickly, but I could not discover anything familiar, even though I had arrived here from Earth. I vaguely remembered a flat surface between tall buildings, but now I saw that there were only buildings on one side, as well as the two outer ends. But I had an explanation for it. When I arrived then, I felt so bad that I could not absorb the details. We had gotten off to one side of the airfield and had walked to the place I mentioned at the beginning of my story. But I would like to say something about this airfield. I believe that there had been a kind of pageantry here in earlier times, because one half of the runway was at the level of the lowest floors of the last row of buildings, the other half was up same height as the buildings themselves, which were all very high. So one could speak here of a lower and an upper city. Between these two districts was the airfield, about 2 kilometers long and 100 meters wide. After Akok had talked to those men for quite a long time, I saw that the hour of parting had come for me. We all went to a nearby sunship. Akok said goodbye to Tuek and two of the other gentlemen. Tuek came to me and laid both hands on my shoulders, shaking me a bit. We could not talk to each other because Akok was not nearby at the moment. After a few moments he came back, calm and happy, as if he had a little fishing excursion in front of him, took me by the arm and led me to the entrance of the ship. A man opened the door and looked after us as we entered. I was astonished as we immediately climbed those intermediate steps and from there into the semi-oval larger room that I remembered. I also remembered that when I landed here I saw several open doors that opened to a corridor. It was the same ship I used to travel from Earth in. Akok put the suitcase down in a small room next to the big room. We sat down on a bench, which was embedded in the wall. I asked, "Are we leaving immediately?" "No, it will take a while." A man who did not look very gracious approached us, handed Akok something and left. Akok followed him. After a short while he came back with a glass of water, which he gave me along with a pill that looked like an olive. He said, "Take this." I asked in alarm, "What's that? Why do I have to take this?" "Eat our TMS, your food for the duration of the journey." I thought this was a joke. How could such a pill replace meals? He noticed my hesitation and said, "You can take it easy. We all feed ourselves on such a journey in this way." "What kind of food is that?" "It's a concentrate. Every nutrient for one day, 23 hours, is included. Besides, it has the advantage that the stomach is not burdened with food. If that is so, then this is a miracle." I swallowed the pill with some water, hoping that it would not cause discomfort on swallowing, but it slipped down more easily than a sip of water alone. We talked for a while about this food system. Then I inquired, "Are we going straight to Earth when we leave here, or are we visiting another planet on the way?" "We're making a little stopover near Eckhart." "How far is this from here?" "Come with me, I want to show it to you." We walked down a corridor and entered a room in which there were already several people who worked diligently. Akok approached one of these men and spoke to him. He led me to a kind of balcony with several chairs. On the walls were many control boxes and a plethora of other devices. Akok sat down and signaled for me to approach. I sat down next to him. He let me see through binoculars and said, "See, there we will land." I exclaimed, "Is that the moon of Eckhart?" He laughingly replied, "Eckhart has no moon like the Earth." "Then it's a different planet?" "No, that's not it. Do not you think it's rectangular or almost oval?" "I can see that, but then what is it?" "This is a platform that we built ourselves." "This thing the Akashans designed?" "Yes, and not just this one. There are several similar ones." "What are you serving for?" "For a variety of purposes." "Are these platforms inhabited?" "Yes, there are always hundreds of people there, as well as various sunships and other apparatus." "Can you see them from Eckhart by day?" "No, you cannot see her without binoculars during the day. At night they shine like a little star." Even though I had heard a lot, even about space, planets, etc., I could not imagine how to construct something like that in space. It was more like a moon than an artificial platform, but I could not ask any further, because Akok did not seem to have time. So we went back to the semi-oval room, and I suddenly knew that this was the room where I had woken up on the flight, but the place against the wall where the bed on which I had slept on was now empty.
to clear my doubts, I asked, "Is this the room where I slept and woke up when I arrived here?" He looked at me in astonishment and said, "Of course. I do not see the bed I was lying on back then. It's still there, it's just embedded in the wall." He led me to the curve of the wall and let the bed slide out of the wall, so it did not seem like anything mysterious. He showed me another 5 couches, 3 were attached below, the other 3 above. I liked this very much, and I asked, "Is this a dormitory room?" "Exactly, we have several more here." I looked at him blankly. He pushed me a little towards the inner passage and touched the wall there. At first I thought beds would come out of the wall again, but this time they came down from the ceiling. 12 in number, always 2 on top of each other. In this way, this room was transformed into a dormitory with 18 beds in no time, 6 on the wall and 12 in height. After showing this with a satisfied face, he let all but one bed disappear. Afterwards he had tables, sinks, etc. appear, and in the end I saw that the benches could be pulled back into the wall. Everything was stowed away except for a bed and a bench. A cork left, and I sat on that bench. I was astonished how these people helped themselves and exploited in every way the space that was so scarce among them, while we live together on the earth crowded together, although we have enough space and just do not know how to make the right use of it. I did not feel so tired anymore, although I had not slept for a long time. Acock came back with the man who looked so unfriendly and had a short conversation with him. When he left, Acock said, "You must be very tired." "Not overly, but if I lie down now, I'm sure I'll fall asleep right away." "Just lie down now then." "Will the ship leave immediately?" "Yes, and that's why you should sleep now." "And if I cannot fall asleep?" "Do not worry, you'll sleep well immediately." "Does the crew not need special clothing for such a trip?" "No, the ship itself protects us against the influences of space. However, we also have special clothing for special cases." Unfortunately, he did not explain these special cases. I went to my bed. Before Acock left the room, I asked him, "Could not you wake me up if the ship is going to land on the platform? I would like to experience this." "Yes, yes," he replied smiling and went away. It was not until much later that I learned why he was laughing. From that moment until they arrived on Earth, they could cause me to fall asleep and wake up as they wanted. When I lay on the bed, I involuntarily looked at a bright spot on the wall and fell asleep immediately afterwards. When I woke up, I heard different people talking. I did not even open my eyes. It took me a while to remember where I was. I sat up in bed and noticed several people, including Acock. When he saw that I had awakened, he said, "We are already arriving, that's why I woke you up." "Where do we arrive?" "On Earth?" "No," he laughed, "we are approaching the platform." I was annoyed and thought, how did he wake me up? I did not feel that anyone shook me. I did not have the slightest idea how long I had slept. Out of curiosity to see the platform, I did not ask about it. I was wide awake and asked, "May I see it?" "Yes, come with me." I went after him and thought we were going to the room with the machines I had visited with him before. However, when we crossed half the corridor, he opened a door that turned out to be the door of an elevator. We went up to another floor. At the top, Acock approached 2 people sitting at a small table, many of which were in this ship. He spoke with them, and the 2 vacated their places for us. I said to myself, "What does he want to show me from here?" Without experience on the spaceship, I wondered how we could get off in the middle of space without any special clothing. As we sat in front of the table, Acock let me look through a device that stood in front of me. When I looked in, I was stunned with amazement. I had expected it to be completely dark here, for I had heard earlier that the night was deep in space. Everything was illuminated here. Also, I had imagined this platform much smaller. I could not even look to the end because of this abundance of light. The whole system consisted of a radiant, apparently very fine material. "Since you cannot speak of above and below in space, I speak of the place where we landed. What I saw could be called a city, There were no houses, just a lot of such igloos made of snow. They looked like hat-shaped bowls. In addition, there were many, many ships, and other items that I had never seen and whose purpose I could not guess. Many people walked back and forth as if they were on solid ground. All wore special suits that I cannot explain, because Acork had no time for me at the moment. I could look in all directions, because Acork changed the direction of the telescope at the push of a button. At that moment, he said, "Look, there's Akkart. That globe there? That's fantastic. I never thought that it would be so beautiful to see it from here. As much as I would like, I will never succeed in reproducing my impression, but I want to try my best." The globe I saw, I do not know if it was enlarged or reduced by the telescope, seemed to have a diameter of 20 to 25 meters. Since the platform was located between Akkart and Sun, we saw the whole side facing us. Akkart was bright, with the exception of a small dark zone on the two poles. I cannot distinguish colors well, but I certainly saw that the surface of Akkart was not blue, not even where I could clearly see a sea between two continents. I noticed about three colors. The first two were those of the sun and the water, the third was like a belt around the globe, and in the area between the belt and the platform, the twilight of the universe prevailed. When we looked at everything, we walked back down to the dorm. Acork said, "You can now continue your interrupted sleep because we will be leaving shortly." "How long have I been sleeping?" "Just a short time. We are still very close here from Akkart." "How far is this distance?"
"About 50,000 kilometers."
"You said 50,000 kilometers, and you call that close?" I should have known that this was an insignificant distance in space. And he had also told me that these ships could travel up to 500 kilometers per second Earth time. Even if on the way here we never attained this speed, we got here very quickly. I broke off the questioning, lay down and fell asleep, as before. When I woke up, I noticed something strange in the ship and myself. I heard a strange hum. I looked around and listened, but no one was around. I took my legs off the bed. These, like my whole body, seemed to be swollen. I waited for a while, hoping that would pass. I actually wanted to lie down again but did not, because I wanted to know where we were now. It had been my own wish not to sleep during the whole journey. Acork appeared from somewhere and asked me, "How are you?" "Well, I feel a little weird. I felt as if I had swollen in size. I have the feeling that Iatiamem in a very strong wind, which even flutters the flesh of my face." He took my pulse, nodded his head and replied, "You are in the best of shape, have no worries about this feeling, Iatiamem will soon pass." "Are we still traveling or have we landed?"
"We have been traveling for many hours and have about a third of the journey behind us."
"How many hours have we flown?"
"One and a half Akkart, or about 11 Earth hours, roughly."
"Did you sleep too?"
"Yes, a few Earths for hours."
"Is the ship now flying at full speed?"
"Yeah,
that's why you have that weird feeling. We left you alone to see how you react after you awakened. We might have let you sleep all the time. But I see now that this is not necessary."
"How long can I stay awake?"
"Well, if you want to go back to sleep, lie down again. If not, then you can stay awake for a while."
"I would rather not sleep."
"Well, then I'll give you a tour of the rest of the ship." We spent the next 2 hours going through almost every section of the ship. There were three floors. The first and the third contained fewer spaces than the middle, which had to do with the shape of the ship, which was narrower at the top and bottom. First we went down to the first floor. All the rooms here were full of accessories except for three rooms. To my surprise, I found two small spaceships in one of the latter, and in the other two there was a kind of loopholes containing powerful solar weapons. From the we returned by elevator to the middle floor. I saw two more dormitories there, various observation rooms, laboratories, rooms and corridors. They were never really empty, because there were many drawers on both sides, full of small items and clothes. Finally, we visited the top floor, where the whole control system was for the movement and defense of the ship. Up here,
In each room, we met men sitting in front of very complicated machines and switchboards, with hands moving back and forth. The sense of responsibility of this crew was admirable. Apparently, only Acock was allowed to talk to me, everyone else did not even glance at me. We now came to a room that impressed me the most. Motors or impulsors, as one might say, were used to produce the motive power for the ship. It was a square room, about 5 by 5 meters. The larger half of it was equipped with 6 barrel-sized engines, arranged in 2 rows of 3. To be on the safe side, I asked Acock more about it, though I could almost guess of their function. He replied, "These machines capture solar energy and convert it into the power that moves the ship." "All 6 work together?" "No, only 2 are in operation."
"And the other 4?
"If one pair fails, the next comes to the function."
"Are the glitches with sun motors?"
"Of course, they're made of a matter, and anything made or involving matter can malfunction."
"Are these the same engines that power the ship in the Earth or Akkad atmosphere?"
"No, they are only used in space. Its function is to increase the magnetic attraction of this plate." He pointed to the dome of the ship. "Between the ship and the planet or the object being sighted, when the ship flies in an atmosphere, we turn on these 16 turbines, of which you see 8 on each side. Each of these turbines has its own slightly smaller motor."
"Is the ship always steered, controlled from this room?"
"Yes, always." "Contrary to my desire to stay here longer and learn more," Acock went on, "we go back to the bedroom now. You have to sleep again in 1 hour at the latest." Stunned by this order, I followed him without answering a word. When we were there, I could not resist asking, "Why do I have to go back to sleep when my condition is satisfactory and I'm not tired at all?" Either he was embarrassed or he did not want to answer me, because he was just remarked, "When you wake up again, I can explain it to you." I lay on my back, folded my arms under my head, and thought about what Acock was concealing, because he obviously did. I looked again at the glowing circle above me and immediately fell asleep, not realizing that Acock had already left. Even when I woke up later, I still had the same uneasy feeling in my body, whether I was lying, sitting or standing. It was always the same. I was just thinking where he slept when he came into the room. I asked him, "Did you sleep in one of the other dorms?" "No, I slept here with you."
"Just us two?"
"No, a few other men slept here, too."
"How is it that I am alone every time I wake up? I never see other beds."
"We only slept here once and got up before you awoke. In the 2 other dormitories, the Sheeper TMS crew sleep." He had since cleared my bed and we sat down together on the bench.
"How many people form the crew?"
"Since the purpose of our journey today is almost exclusively to bring you back to Earth, this time there are only 32 people, including both of us."
"Why did you say almost exclusively apostrophe?"
"But I didn't TMT receive an answer. Either he did not want, or was not allowed to answer me. After all, it is possible that one or the other crew member fails. We have taken care, of course. They told me there are always crew members of Akkad somewhere on Earth."
"Yes, that's right. Where are they?"
"They are where we have stationed our ships."
"Where are these stations on Earth?
In space, near Earth, or on the moon?"
"No, no, no," he exclaimed.
"To tell you this, I should have more confidence in you.
So you do not trust me completely?"
"I have seen and heard so many things, and you showed me the whole ship. This is something completely different. Will you visit these people before or after you put me down on Earth?"
"That's unimportant. You will not notice it anyway.
I'm sure you will not even notice if the ship is moving or standing still, and just as little whether we contact somebody or not."
"How long have we been traveling?"
I changed the subject because I did not get an answer to my last questions.
2/3 of the journey we have behind us, so about 45 million kilometers.
When I heard him say such numbers, I was always very weak. Only once in my life had I traveled to Sao Paulo in the state capital, and that had seemed like a very long time. And he called such a number as irrelevant, though it meant 1,000 times and more around the world. Have we already flown through the mentioned neutral space?
Yes, that's behind us. Why does one speak of a neutral space in space? I do not know if you will understand this,